what Sunday should mean to you. Reminded of an old Andy Capp cartoon illustrating the tension that we who have been raised in church, the tension that we feel about Sunday. Andy has gone fishing for the day on Sunday. He caught nothing. On his way back home, he stops at a market to buy an armload full of fish. He goes to the door, he turns to the proprietor, and he says, I want you to throw all the fish to me I just bought so I can go home and say, I caught these fish. Then the last frame of the cartoon shows Andy contentedly walking home with the fish under his arm, saying to himself, I always like to tell the truth on Sunday. Well, I think all of us who've been raised with church have had a bit of a tension as to what, where's the freedom, where's the taboos about Sundays. And as parents, you have that tension with your children when you're trying to teach them that there is something special about that day, and that is a continuous thing as we pass that on to each successive generation. Some of you will remember the movie Chariots of Fire. And the focal point of the story is the young man by the name of Eric Liddell. He was a young athlete from the University of Edinburgh, and he planned to join the Olympics. And everybody knew that if he did go, he would probably win. He just was that fast. But here's the problem. The trial runs to get into the Olympics were on a Sunday. Eric would not run on Sunday. No way. The Prince of Wales actually tried to convince him to run on Sunday and told him, quote, why don't you just set aside this little conviction you have and just run a race that will only last a few minutes? But Eric stuck to his convictions. If I have the story straight, someone else ran in the trial heats on Sunday in his place, secured that place. He then took over and won the Olympics. So the question is, should Eric have run on Sunday? Would you have run on Sunday? Today we have many fine Christian ball players and hockey players who play on Sunday for a living. What does God have to say about Sunday? The old Puritans believed that all the regulations of the Sabbath should be observed on Sunday, and so they would have rules like, for example, you could comb your hair on Sunday, but you couldn't shave. Well over 100 years ago, probably about 130, 140 years ago, the northeastern states, where they have a climate similar to ours once in a while in winter, there's a young pastor who lived in an area where there's a lot of ice and snow, and one Sunday he skated to church, and there was a canal that came by close to the church where he lived, so he skated to church. Well, the elders of the church didn't know what to do. Is it right that a pastor should skate to church on a Sunday? So the elders got together to discuss the problem, and their final conclusion was this. Yes, you can skate to church on Sunday as long as you don't enjoy it. Well, what do you do with Sundays? When we look at Exodus, and we look at the meaning and the purpose of this, what we call the Sabbath, or the Bible calls the Sabbath, that we are to keep it holy, in other words, to set it aside for a special purpose. The Sabbath was a Saturday, Shabbat, which means to rest, to cease from labors, to stop. What did this mean to them? Well, first of all, the Sabbath had the purpose of rest, and it was built right into the very fabric of life. And it's based, first of all, on Genesis chapter 2. And Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 to 3, we really have the basis for what we call the Sabbath that is known in the Old Testament. So in Genesis 2, verse 1, we read this. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. And by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Because on it, he rested from all the work of creating he had done. Right from creation, God wanted to demonstrate to us that there was a principle to be observed. One in seven should be different. It's a different day. That day you set aside. It's holy. It's set aside for a purpose. It's part of the fabric of who we are. And He observed it as an example for all of us. And also because His work was done. What was He going to do in the seventh day? He had finished His labors, and now He's sitting back and enjoying all that He has created. He's savoring it, enjoying it. Now, before we go on to about rest, let me just say just a word about work. Because the Bible is very clear. It says in Exodus 20, verse 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Folks, rest has no meaning if you don't work. Some of us would like to rest 7 days a week. And we would be bored silly. I can only holiday so long and I go nuts. I need something to do. We were made to produce, to be productive, to be fruitful. One of the worst things you can do for your kids is give them everything. They don't have to work for what they have. I'll never forget the doctor we had in Medicine Hat. And, of course, you're always on call. And he had one phone line. And he had a daughter. Right? Very popular. And used up the line a lot. And he would always say, you know, you can't use the phone much because I need that line open if I get called. And frustrated the daylights out of her. And I asked him one day, I said, you could own the telephone company. You have that much money. Why don't you just get another line in? And that way she has her own line and you have your line. He said, nope. I want to teach her that everything comes by hard work and discipline. And she has to learn to wait and to share. She has to learn discipline. If I just put another line in it for her, and she can have her own phone whenever she wants, she loses the discipline that I'm trying to teach her. Trying to teach her there are other people that are as equally important in her life as her friends. And that's her parents and her dad and his work and everything else. I thought, wow, good on you to teach your child the discipline of sharing and of priorities and realizing you're not the center of the universe. But also, we have a problem of being workaholics. Some of you here, and I won't put a name on you, but you tend to be a bit of a workaholic. You love to work. And if you could work a little bit more, you probably would, because you like work that much. And I'm glad you love work. But to keep enjoying that work, you need that seventh day of rest so that you can enjoy what work has to offer. And God said, I rested and you rest. Now when God rested, it's not because He was tired. I mean, He did not wipe the sweat off His brow after day six and said, man, I need a Sabbath. I need a rest. The Bible says He never grows weary or tired. When He rested, that word for rest means to stop, to observe. He rested and He observed and He saw His gardens and the hills and the bushes and the trees and the foothills and the mountains. And had a big smile. And He just loved what He had created. He savored. He rested to savor the work He had completed. To enjoy, just to take it all in and enjoy it. But the principle is there. One day out of seven, you are to set aside to be different. And we have discovered that is also best for our bodies. For example, during the French Revolution, the idea arose that they wanted to take France and cut out of its social life every single vestige of religious influence. They wanted to be a totally secular society with no hint of religious background at all or influence. So the social planners of the French Revolution realized that the idea of a Sunday, one out of 7 days, being a Judeo-Christian idea, they decided we're going to change it. We're going to make 10-day weeks. Every 10th day is a day of rest. You work 9 and you rest on the 10th. What do you think happened? The people began to become tired, weary, and sickly. and unproductive. And the French had to go back to a seven-day week. And one of the French social scientists finally said something to this effect, quote, "Let us observe Sunday in the name of hygiene, if not in the name of religion." They realized there's something in the human fabric that needs the seventh day to be a day of rest. That's what we were designed for, one out of seven. That's the rhythm that we work best at. One out of seven is the best way to take care of your body. What a beautiful piece of social legislation from God. When you trace the history of all civilizations, whether it's the Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Arabians, the Persians, they all had a seven-day week. It is in the human fabric, one in seven. That's the human rhythm for life. Work six, rest one. So it was a day of rest. Secondly, the Jewish Sabbath was a day of reflection. And we see this particularly in Deuteronomy 5, where one other thought is added to the commandment. Exodus talks about resting because you work 6 days and you rest the seventh. Deuteronomy 5, where Moses recaps the Ten Commandments, adds something else to something that the Jews had to do in the Sabbath. Rest, and then this. Deuteronomy 5, verse 15. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. It's a day to remember, a day to reflect. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless His holy name. And then He says, and forget none of His benefits. We need time to remember, to reflect, and to celebrate, and to rest in that. A group of American explorers went to Africa, and they employed some native guides. The first day they rushed and made exceptional time, as most Americans would like to do. Second and the third day, the same thing, they made great time. They just pushed these guides right to the limit. But on the seventh day, notice these guides sitting underneath the tree and they refused to budge. And they wouldn't listen to their commands to keep going. Finally, one of the natives explained to the explorers that they couldn't go that day till their souls had caught up with their bodies. They felt they had outrun themselves. It was time to play catch-up that day. The Sabbath was a catch-up day for the Jews. An old miner once explained to a visitor, "I let my mules spend one day a week outside the mines to keep them from going blind." The person who does not spend time away from the daily life, the daily grind of life, will grow blind in his soul. We need this to get our perspective back. Where does all the stuff come from? It comes from God. We take that to focus on Him and be strengthened and charged up in Him. And so there's two primary purposes for the old Sabbath. It was to rest, and it was to remember, to reflect. That's what it was all about. Well, what was Jesus' response to the Sabbath? Six times he was accused of being a Sabbath breaker. This commandment got Jesus into a lot of trouble. In fact, he was known as a, quote, continuous Sabbath breaker. You know that? Jesus, he just doesn't observe the Sabbath. He's okay with the others, but this one, he keeps breaking all the time. And of course, by Jesus' day, the Jews had a very elaborate system set up to live by, to protect the Sabbath. They had discovered and written out 1,521 ways in which you could break the Sabbath. They thought of every conceivable thing that you couldn't do so that you would keep the Sabbath. For example, if a man was bitten by a flea, he had to permit the flea to keep biting him, because if he tried to catch the flea, he would be guilty of the sin of hunting on the Sabbath. So they had all these rules what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. You couldn't pluck gray hair. Some of us would get pretty busy on Sunday. Good thing they didn't have mirrors back then. You couldn't walk more than 1,000 yards. You couldn't write. And once later on, once even paper was invented, later on, the Jews said you couldn't even tear paper. They had very strict rules what you couldn't do on a Sabbath. One day, Jesus and disciples are walking by a grain field. Jesus stops, reaches out, steals a few heads of corn from the Romney wheat field, rubs it out, starts eating it, and the Jews are watching. They go, aha, breaking the Sabbath. He's threshing on Sunday. He's combining on Sunday. We got him. Jesus, you're a Sabbath breaker. Well, I mean, Jesus always had to respond to this particular accusation that he was a Sabbath breaker. And he had to remind them that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's not just to honor a day, it's actually to honor a person. What's good for the person? So we were hungry. It was good that we eat, so I had to do a little bit of thrashing here so we could eat. There are three conflicting viewpoints about the Sabbath today. The first view is this. It's what we call the Seventh-day Adventist view, who believe that Christians should observe Saturday as the Sabbath. They say this commandment has never been changed. There is no evidence in the New Testament that Christians felt obligated to worship on Saturday. Yes, early Jewish Christians who used to go to the synagogue would continue to go on the Sabbath to worship Yeshua, to worship Jesus, but they were soon kicked out of the synagogue because the Jews didn't want to hear about Jesus. So they were kicked out, and you eventually end up with a house movement. So Christianity became a house movement. And so because of their Jewish tradition, they first of all began to still worship on Saturday, because that's when society shut down. I mean, Israel shut down on the Sabbath. And so they were shut down too, so then of course they would take that time to worship. But because of certain other reasons that I'm going to share in a little while, they also began to worship on Sunday. So actually New Testament Christians worshiped on Saturday and on Sunday. And slowly it began to shift over to Sunday only. And I'll mention why later too. But so you have the Seventh-day Adventists, by the way. There is a group down in the States called the Seventh-day Baptists. And so there are those people who, out of their conscience, say, no, that's the Sabbath, and that's okay. We'll look at that a little bit later. Then there is what we call the Christian Sabbath view. That is, that the view that Sunday has replaced Saturday as the official Sabbath day, but Sunday is still a total Sabbath. So basically all the regulations come over, and actually when you go back to the history of this view, this was especially pushed by the Dutch Reformed, who really pushed this view that Sunday needs to be an observance of all the Sabbath rules. I think they've lightened the load in some of these areas, but they really pushed that view at first. There are some difficulties with saying that Sunday is the new Sabbath, because there are a lot of things on the Sabbath that you weren't allowed to do, and if you couldn't do those, we'd have some very miserable Sundays. And I'll share that in a minute as well. So you've got the Seventh-day Adventist view, you've got the Christian Sabbath view, and then you have the what I would call the abiding principle view, and the reason I call it that is because that's what I read. If there's another view, theologians call it the abiding principle view. The principles of the Sabbath are to be observed on Sunday, but not all the rules and regulations. Why are they no longer part of our Sundays today? Well, number one, the New Testament did not instruct Gentile believers to reflect on the Jewish exodus from Egypt. That's one of the basic things you did on the Sabbath. You reflected their deliverance from Egypt. And that was not something that was opposed to the Gentiles at all. Secondly, the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15, when they discussed, what do we do with Gentiles? Our church is becoming less and less Jewish, more and more Gentile. How do we handle this? Because they had all these Jewish, you know, things they took with them into their new church. And their conclusion was, there's a few things they asked the Gentiles to do to respect their Jewish heritage, but keeping of the Sabbath is not one mention. Thirdly, nowhere in the New Testament are we told to observe Sabbath laws on Sunday. For example, you could not travel on the Sabbath. You could not cook on the Sabbath. You could not carry a load on the Sabbath. You could not buy or sell on the Sabbath. So in other words, you couldn't go to a restaurant and buy. You couldn't have anything on the Sabbath. You couldn't buy or sell anything on the Sabbath. You couldn't build a fire on the Sabbath. Can you imagine? October 3rd, it's 40 below, and you couldn't build a fire? Well, it's the Sabbath. Can't build a fire on the Sabbath. A lot of those things just do not apply at all. In Romans 14, verse 5, we are told, there are those who treat one day special, those who treat another day above another. He said, let each one do his purpose on his own heart. And Colossians 2:16 talks about the fact that, look at Colossians 2:16. The Romans 1, I'm skipping over because I'll look at it in a couple of minutes. Colossians 2:16. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. So don't judge people by that. Because if you follow his thought, both from Galatians and Colossians, he said they've all been nailed to the cross. Because a Sabbath was a sign. And the sign pointed to the ultimate rest in Christ. Now that Hebrews says Christ is our rest, the old Sabbath is actually done away with. Because Jesus is that rest. The Sabbath pointed to. Note the observance of the New Testament church. Jesus, first of all, rose on the first day of the week. And quoting Herschel Ford, who writes this quote, Jesus died on the eve of the Jewish Sabbath. The old Sabbath died with him. He was in the grave during the Jewish Sabbath. The old Sabbath was buried with him. He arose right after the Jewish Sabbath, and there is now a new day because of his resurrection. And when we meet, it is to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. And that's the first day of the week. He arose on the first day of the week. Pentecost, the coming of the Holy Spirit, came in the first day of the week. The church was born on the first day of the week. And so we gather on the first day of the week as a celebration of Jesus' victory over sin and his life that he came to give us. It's a celebration of the coming of the Spirit that caused us to be born again and dwelt with the Spirit of God. To celebrate the birth of the church as we know it today. And in Acts chapter 20, verse 7, we are told that on the first day of the week, the believers got together for the breaking of bread. Not on the Sabbath, not on Saturday, on Sunday. They came together to celebrate the breaking of the bread. We worshiped the Lord the way he did on the cross. And 1 Corinthians 16, verse 2 says, on the first day of the week when you're gathered, you bring all your money to your gathering place. And so there's all kinds of evidence pointing that we do not worship on Saturday, we worship on Sunday. And for these reasons, because of what has been accomplished for us, and we celebrate what the Lord has done. Well, the tradition of Sunday being a special God-ordained day or a sacred day is fast fading. And while we may be free to debate the reasons why Sunday is losing its Sunday-ish, I don't think we can debate the conclusion that Sunday observance is a fading tradition in our Western culture. One writer put it this way. Our great-grandparents called it the Holy Sabbath. Our grandparents called it Sabbath. Our parents called it Sunday. And we call it the weekend. We have lost something. We are losing something. It is reality. It is reality. Let's face it. Many people, many Christians, think nothing of skipping church because there's something better on that Sunday. It has lost its significance in the psyche of a many Christian mind. So how do we view Sunday? Note that what God said about the Sabbath, first of all, in Exodus 20, in the last parts, Exodus 20 and verse 11, the last part of the verse that says, "Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Now, the Sabbath was not to be a burden. It was to be a blessing. It was for their good, for their enjoyment. So if Sunday should be a blessing so much more, how should Christians observe Sunday? And here, there's your, you and I will either agree or disagree. I'm going to share four views with you. I'm going to share two secondary suggestions and two primary suggestions. And almost from least importance to the most important. But they're all important. I'm just keeping the most important for the last. Okay, two secondary suggestions on how to keep Sunday. First of all, number one, focus on your family. The original Sabbath in the Old Testament was a home Sabbath. People didn't go anywhere. For in Acts 16, he said, "Stay home. Don't go anywhere." The old Sabbath was a home day. It was a family where the family rested and celebrated their deliverance as a people from Egypt. It was an important time for the father to teach his family their faith history and their values. Everybody felt connected. That's what we need to do. We need to take the principle, the abiding principle, and say this is an awesome family day. Throughout the week we get scattered, but Sunday we're together as a family. One of my very fond memories as a child is Sunday afternoons. Once my dad bored me to death with his 2-hour nap after church. Sunday, you went to Sunday school, you went to church, you had a nice roast beef dinner. Then my dad slept till I poked him in the ribs long enough to wake him up. I was bored. I had no brothers or sisters at home. I was kind of a loner at home, and I needed something to do. I was bored. I hated Sunday afternoons till then. It meant nothing to me. I was going nuts. There's only so many times you can throw a rubber ball against the side of a barn and have it bounce back and catch it and pretend you're throwing somebody out at second base. So, once he finally got up, and I think the same happened with all my relatives, we all went to the old Hebert place, my grandma and grandpa Hebert. And if we were all there, there'd be about 7 or 8 families there. And all of us cousins, you know, about 20 of us, we would play ball against our uncles. We had a great afternoon playing ball till 5 o'clock, till it's time to go home and do chores. I have fond memories of Sunday afternoon being a family time, a relative time. Aunts, uncles, cousins coming together. Great time to connect. Sunday afternoon, not Sunday morning. Sunday afternoon is a great opportunity to have some quality time with family. Play games, go for a bike ride, go for an ice cream. Just recharging your family life. It's a time to strengthen family relationships. It's a time to strengthen marriage. So focus on your family. This is a principle we see from the old Sabbath. Secondly, do a good deed. Do a good deed. I base this, first of all, on Luke. And you may want to turn with me to Luke chapter 13. And then we're going to turn to Matthew. So Luke chapter 13, and beginning with verse 10. And then we're going to jump over to Matthew 12. So Luke 13, verse 10. And here is what we read, beginning with verse 10. On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues. And a woman who was there, who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years, she was bent over, couldn't straighten up at all, and when Jesus saw her, He called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant. Jesus, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." See that old, you know, nope, can't do any good on that day. You got to observe the day. And Jesus always had to keep coming back. No, no, no. I wasn't made for the day. The day was made for me. It was made for my good. It was made for my blessing. This blessed the woman. What an opportunity on the Sabbath to heal her. He did good on the Sabbath. Well, Matthew 12. Matthew chapter 12, and beginning with verse 9. Matthew 12, verse 9. Going on from that place, he went to the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" I mean, that was always the contention to them. And he said to them, "If any of you has a sheep, and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." You can see how that riled them up. Wow. It is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Now we're still talking way back when in the old Sabbath days. This word for lawful that Jesus used is the word for authorized. I authorize you to do good on the Sabbath. When you see a need, you better respond to it. You can't say, "Well, you know, it's Sunday, Sabbath, you know, can't do anything that day, but come back Monday," or "but those days, come back Sunday." Jesus said, "No, no. I authorize you to do good on the Sabbath." Well, if we take that principle of the Sabbath that Jesus reinterpreted, what about for us who now live on this side of the cross and worship on Sundays? We can take that principle and do good on Sunday. I think Sunday afternoons or evenings can be a good time to go visit someone in the hospital. Or someone who's sick and couldn't come to church. Stop by. What a great way to do something good on Sunday. Phone a discouraged friend. Have someone over for coffee. Play ball with some kids who don't have a dad. And just pour into their lives. It's a great way to use a Sunday afternoon. Have a neighborhood cookout in your man cave in your garage. Yeah. Just enjoy some good roast beef, wherever it could be. The sky is the limit. The willing heart can find 1,000 ways to do good on Sunday if the purpose is to do good. During the week we're busy. We don't have a lot of time for other people. Could it be that sometimes, on a Sunday afternoon or evening, you've got an hour to do that something special for somebody that you feel could benefit from it? To do good on that day. Well, those are my two secondary suggestions. Focus on the family. Do a good deed. Those are principles we find. Now, my two primary suggestions. We're getting more serious. Number one, get recharged on Sunday. Get recharged on Sunday. Now, I avoided saying rest on Sunday, and I do that for a reason. Rest is an important part of Sunday for those who work hard physically from Monday through Saturday. But if you live an office life, you don't get any exercise. You're not necessarily physically tired on Sunday. You don't need to sleep as much as somebody who works physically hard all week. And especially in the agrarian lifestyle of the Jews, who worked hard physically from sun up till sundown, all the way through till Friday night. They needed that day just to give their body a break. Well, folks, my body's had too long a break. Just look at me. Probably the best thing I could do is for a nice, long, brisk walk on a Sunday afternoon. It would be the best thing for my body to get recharged. But do what you have to do to recharge yourself. Sometimes a good jog later Sunday afternoon would be healthier for your brain and your body than just holding a couch down. One of my professors in seminary, Dr. Dan Block, who is used a lot as with the NIV Bible translation of the Old Testament, he was involved in several books interpreting the NIV from the Hebrew to English. I remember we were in our Genesis class, and he was talking about the Sabbath. And he said, you know, all week long, I teach, I read, I prepare lessons from morning till night. I'm just busy. Saturday, I'm still trying to finish what I had to do all week. All your papers, stuff you do, research I got to do. And maybe he has a little bit of time to go shopping Saturday afternoon with his wife, etc. And then comes Sunday. Well, of course, Sunday you go to church. So he said, Sunday afternoon, the best thing I could do for you is go canoeing. I take that canoe and I go out there towards the Ontario border, and I hit one of those lakes, and I'm out there just enjoying the creation of God, breathing in fresh air because he smelt stale air all week in seminary. Get out there, breathe in some fresh air, enjoy the lakes, enjoy the trees, enjoy the wonder of God. Get away, be quiet, get some exercise, breathe in fresh air. And he says, that's the best thing I can do on a Sunday afternoon. I couldn't argue with him. Because he says, that's what recharges me. Then when I come back on Monday, I'm ready to pour myself into the lives of my students all week along. And then come the next weekend again, Sunday afternoon, is his time to get recharged. He says, that's how I get recharged. I'm just simply telling you, folks, there is no one set way to get recharged. But the point of Sunday is get recharged, whatever that takes. Whatever that takes. If that means that after church you drive out and you get to a lookout point somewhere, make a little fire, just look at the mountains, spend some time with God, just breathe in some fresh air, and just you're away from traffic, TV, radio, and traffic. If that refreshes you, then I hope to see some dust coming out of here at about 12:35. Not before I'm finished. Sunday was meant a time to be recharged for the people of God. For those who work physically, rest is important. For those who work mentally, maybe a little bit of exercise is important. Get out there, get the fuzzies out of your brain, and get your body in shape. Shoot hoops with some kids. Do whatever to recharge your marriage and your family life. One of the fond memories I also have Sunday afternoon is if we didn't go to our family gathering to have ball games and eat that Hebert chocolate cake with whipped cream, then my dad would go for a drive. We'd go to the foothills. We're just half a mile, our farm was half a mile from the Pemina foothills. We'd just drive out, look at all the trees, the valleys, the Pemina River, drive around farms, look at crops. Just take in the beauty, just savor the beauty of where we live. It was incredibly recharging to my dad, who worked hard physically from sunup to sundown. And just a sort of enjoy how the crops were doing, everything looked. It recharged him. It refreshed him. It nurtured him as he rested, sat back, and just drank in the beauty of the world he worked so hard to sustain in his life. Well, that leads me to that big Christian dilemma. What about people who work on Sunday. What do we do with those people? We have some policies and bylaws in our Constitution about people who work on Sunday. What do we do with that? Well, I knew you were waiting for this, so I might as well just dive in. Okay, Romans chapter 14. Keep in mind, we are dealing with principles. There are no set rules and regulations of the old Sabbath, but there are principles that are very important for our well-being and our health, that are part of our fabric. Romans 14, verse 5 to 8. One man considers one day more sacred than another. Another man considers every day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. He who regards one day as special does so to the Lord. He who eats meat eats to the Lord, for he gives thanks to the Lord. And he who abstains does so to the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself alone. None of us dies to himself alone. If we live, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. Whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. For this very reason, verse 9, let's keep going. For this very reason, Christ died, returned to life, so that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living. You then, why do you judge your brother? Why do you look down on your brother? We will all stand before God's judgment seat. It is written, as surely as I live, says the Lord, every knee will bow before me, every tongue confess to God. So then, each of us will give an account of himself to God. Therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Now, did you hear that? So you see somebody working on Sunday, what do? Stop passing judgment. If for you a special day is a special day to the Lord, he says, awesome, you keep it special to the Lord. If someone else can use that day in a different day to the Lord, he says, you can't judge him for it. You can't judge him for it. The Colossians 2:16 makes it clear, you can't judge people by their how they keep the Sabbaths and festivals and new moons. It's all part of the old order. There aren't rules for Sunday. There are principles for Sunday. Instead, make up your mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in your brother's way. There may have been times my dad maybe wanted to do something on a Sunday, but he knew it would be offensive to a neighbor, so he wouldn't do it. If it wasn't for himself, it was for his neighbor. So there's a sensitivity that comes with that. But our job as believers is not to pass judgment on that. Now, we had heard that Jesus said, if your ox, your sheep falls in, you pull him out. Well, Andrew Eberle, after the first service, came up to me and said, you know, he heard Ruth Graham talk about this. People asked, well, why does Billy Graham always work on Sunday, and etc.? You know, he's always tired when he preaches, and he does a lot of crusades on Sundays. But she said, well, but not always. He has his breaks. And she said, you know, if your ox always falls in on a Sunday, maybe it's time to shoot the ox. If there's always a reason to work on Sunday, maybe you should do something about it. If you have to do something, okay. But if it is it continues to be an ongoing thing, so something's wrong. It's time to shoot the ox. And I agree. You know, we there are exceptions. We can do things because we feel we need to do it, okay. But as a principle, we need to be recharged on Sunday. We need to rest. We need to take back and take a breath. Be refreshed. Well, one more. Not only get recharged on Sunday, but we need to reflect and celebrate God's grace on Sunday. Revelation 1:10 refers to this as the Lord's Day. This is the Lord's Day. Every day is the Lord's Day, but there is something special about this day as we celebrate His resurrection, the coming of the Spirit, the birth of the church, what Jesus has done to bring us life. We have reason to celebrate. We have reason to break bread, as Acts 20 says, and as we did today. a day to draw near to God. In the original Sabbath, in Deuteronomy chapter 5. And I just want to quickly read church that again. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12. It says, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord has commanded you. And then verse 15. Remember, you were slaves in Egypt. The Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. We celebrate Sunday because of what He did for us. He rescued us out of the Egypt of sin. And so what we do to celebrate is we may have Sunday school, we go to church, we may have special services sometimes just to be spiritually refreshed in the Lord, deeper life services, whatever. Let me compare it this way. All week long, you kind of live on fast food. You quickly take out the daily bread, have a little devotional. There you go. Have my time with God. 5.5 minutes. Then come Sunday morning, you get a 2-hour meat and potato from Pastor Art. Why? You can't live on fast food alone. So then every seventh day, God says, it's time to give yourself, just relax, sit back, and get some good meat and potatoes from the Word. Not 5.5 minutes. Not 8, not 9. I think sermonettes produce Christianettes. You want a full meal deal? Do you want to be a full Christian? That's what we do on Sunday. You say, Lord, you know, we were sustained by those little devotionals, those little times with God, you know, those. Now we go, okay, let's sing some of those songs. Let's have a time of prayer together. Let's wait on the Lord. Let's break bread. Let's hear from the Word, someone who spent some time pouring into it. Let's get a good dose of faith that will keep us going again. One of the biggest hindrances for spiritual growth for today's family is sports. I think sports has become the new religion over time. Make no bones about it. I love sports. Our three boys were heavily involved in all kinds of sports. But there was one sport we put a kibosh on when they were about 11 years old. We said, no more hockey. I'm not against hockey, but I'll tell you why we quit hockey for our boys. I'm only talking for ourselves. You get to a certain level, pretty soon, you play 6 months of hockey tournaments all over Alberta. And you're never around on Sunday. And you get to a point where your little Johnny, from November through till April, spends more time in an arena than the house of God. And sports is becoming our God as a society. And somewhere we had to pull the plug and say, you know what? Now it's encroaching on our spiritual journey. I'm not saying you can't be a Christian family and be in hockey, but boy, you've got to be very intentional how to keep growing spiritually because it will encroach. That's why I love football. At least there's no Sunday morning football, okay? And I get recharged by Sunday afternoon football. I'll give you notice, okay? But my time to be spiritually charged is Sunday morning, and I can't give that up for anything. And I couldn't give it up for our kids. We had to make a choice. And I know that for all eternity, they will thank us for it. While walking deeply with the Lord, serving Him for years. Because Jesus was first in their lives. There does come a point where you have to make a decision. And it's a very personal decision. It's something you as a family have to make on your own. But you need to make it very carefully, very perfectly. To make sure that you maintain your spiritual integrity with your children and with your household. In closing, I want to close with one last passage, and that is from Isaiah 58. And again, we have a principle from the Sabbath that I want to apply to how we deal with our lives celebrating Sunday and our walk with God. In Isaiah chapter 58, verse 13 and 14, and he's looking back on their Sabbaths and how they deal with Sabbaths, Isaiah 58:13. Here's what we read. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath, and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. The whole purpose of Sabbath is to find your joy in God. It's not meant to be a burden, meant to be a blessing, meant to be a joy. Everything you do on Sunday is to be a blessing, is to be out of joy for your Lord, is to be out of your delight in God. To come here, be built up, delight in His love and His grace, go out and do a good deed and delight in the grace we can extend to someone else, spend some time with our family and delight in what God has given us. Take some time to rest or go for a good jog and just delight what God has done. But it is for the purpose of delighting in the Lord. It's always for the purpose of delighting in the Lord and what He has done for us, and what He's given us. So, in closing, four suggestions what we can do with our Sundays. Number one, focus on your family. This is a Sabbath principle. Secondly, do a good deed. Jesus authorized us to do good on the special day. Thirdly, get recharged, either by resting and sleeping or jogging or whatever. Recharge yourself physically, mentally, relationally, and then spiritually. Take time. Come to church. Celebrate, reflect, taste, and be built up in the grace of God. That's how we use these Sundays.